Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0, the only podcast that focuses on mental health while mixing in movies, music, books, sports, and pop culture. Here are your hosts, Rebecca and Joe Lombardo.
March. Hi guys, can you hear us? I hope.
We hope you can hear us. We might have shot too wide of the mark.
Yeah, I don't know. Good morning.
Anyway, and welcome to Voices for Change 2.0. We're glad to have you with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, good. Scott can hear us. Yay. We are apparently discombobulated this morning.
That's all right. We'll get it together.
It's been a discombobulated week.
Oh, yeah, it has. Definitely, for sure.
Yeah. So, as you guys may or may not know, Beck and I, we've been together 17 and a half years, almost 18. And one decision that we made early on was not to have children. It was just a choice for us, you know, nothing.
It had a lot more to do with me and my health concerns, my mental health concerns, especially, were a big issue for me. So, and there's other stuff, you know, going on, but you know, it wasn't just a selfish, we can't handle it kind of thing. It was a well thought out decision that we made.
Yep. So, anyway, the last week has been real interesting because we've had family staying with us, and part of that family is a 3-month-old baby, and it's been an adjustment, but it's been wonderful. She is, in my personal opinion, and I'm not biased at all, the cutest baby in the world, and just smiles all the time, is freaking adorable, and it's been kind of nice having her around, you know, and just getting to cuddle with her and feed her and watch other people change her diapers. And So it's been really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's been nice.
Yeah, and I'm almost back to normal. I know that you guys were probably wondering what the heck was going on. We missed a couple of weeks of live shows there, and we apologize to those people that were supposed to be on the show, but we will catch you up soon. Mm-hmm. I was really, really, really sick. Not really sure what was going on, but it was a terrible, awful experience.
Yeah.
And I'm finally getting back to normal, so we're excited about that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good thing, and she's finally feeling better. So what's next on the docket?
Today.
Today, March.
Something or another. March 9th.
March 9th, yeah.
It is my birthday month.
Yeah.
Oh, it is exciting.
It's my annual take a week off to harbor Beck during her birthday. That's every year, so.
Well, this morning we are very excited to talk to our guest. I've kind of been following her a little bit on Twitter, and she's amazing. She's got so much going for her and is so ready, willing, and able to help other people. She's an advocate, an author. She is a founder of her own nonprofit, and we're just really fortunate to have her with us today. So please welcome Natalie Harris.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
Yay!
Well, thank you for being here. We appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
My pleasure.
Thanks for joining us on this balmy March morning.
I'm freezing.
we're hopeful too. It's supposed to warm up someday.
Yes.
Yeah.
In our future.
Yeah, there's a meme floating around. I don't know if either of you have seen it, where it says, Michigan DNR has asked everybody to remove their ice shanties by July 3rd in accordance with the fireworks for July 4th.
Oh, good Lord.
That's awesome.
So So anyway, thanks for joining us. Thanks for being with us this morning, Natalie. Do you have any questions for us before we begin?
No, I'm good to go. Whatever you want to chat about, I'm open to chatting about.
Yay.
Yeah, we heard the boat.
We would love to chat with you. Yeah. We'd love to chat with you about a great many things.
Don't make fun.
I'm not making fun.
It's just the truth. No problem.
All right. So why don't we jump right in here? We've got a whole list of questions for you. So hopefully we'll get to them all today.
Yeah.
We'll start off with the question that we most often ask our guests at the beginning of every show, and that is, where does your mental health journey begin?
My mental health journey begins when I was a child, but I didn't know it back then. I think when I kind of talk about my depression, I divide it into four different layers, and it kind of goes from a layer one to four, and it depends on basically my experiences in life and what I've gone through. But looking back now, I used to feel very off, and I didn't understand, and I was uncomfortable in my own skin and just couldn't be happy with anything that was around me, even if it was Christmas or something, you know, something that a kid would be so excited about. I wasn't happy, and I didn't know why. And looking back now, I can realize that was like at least my first layer of depression that was forming.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I can definitely relate and understand that. There were times when I was a kid where it felt like I was outside, you know, like I was an observer, you know, everybody else. And I still struggle with this, actually, where, you know, everybody else is just living their life, doing their thing. They have their ups, they have their downs, they have all this stuff going on. And you know, you're kind of left feeling like, well, what more is there? You know what I mean? Like it's just,
yeah.
it's a weird feeling. It really is. It's a disconnected kind of feeling.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. I used to say that I feel like an alien. I feel like,
yeah.
I'd be in my car and I'd watch people walk past, you know, at a light, holding hands and smiling on a sunny day. And I didn't understand why. I thought they were faking it. Like I couldn't understand how people were happy, because I just wasn't able to feel joy, and I didn't know why.
Yeah. I get
that. Did you ever voice your concerns? Obviously, when you're very young, you can't. But when you got a little bit older, did you ever voice your concerns to anyone in your family?
I used to actually have, looking back now, not really knowing what was going on, I'd have outbursts, and I would I think was the boiling point where this feeling that I couldn't hide anymore would burst out of me, and I would tear apart my room. And I was very big perfectionist, and I wanted my room to be perfect. And I guess I thought, well, if my external world is perfect, then why shouldn't my internal world be perfect? And that just wasn't the case. So I would get frustrated. Mm-hmm. And I would say to my mom when I was younger, you know, I just don't feel good. I don't know why. I just don't feel good. And she would just say, you know, and not in a mean way, but she would say, oh, it's your hormones, or, you know, you're just part of, it's a stage you're going through, never really addressing that there could be something clinically wrong with me. And then for, you know, having that kind of push to the side for so long, I didn't talk about it for years and years until, 2014, when I was diagnosed with PTSD after being a paramedic for 11 years, and I overdosed, and that's a big span of time there. But then I needed to actually really address something major was going on, but I didn't know that I was pushing and stuffing down that emotion for so long.
I can understand that, definitely. I know you know, looking back on my situation, there was a great many mornings where I would get up, you know, supposed to be getting ready for school, and it was, I have a stomach ache and I have a headache, you know,
yes.
and I look back now and I realize the situation, and I'm kind of surprised my parents didn't realize it, because I was pretty vocal about it. And, you know, I was terrified of certain teachers. I was afraid of certain classes. You know, I just was a very, very anxious kid. And, you know, it only got worse as I got older. I was a brat as a 16-year-old. I was just miserable. And 16, 17, and then at 19, I was diagnosed. So, you know, looking back, I know I started out very early on too. And the general consensus has been for most of our guests that they get diagnosed about early teens.
Yeah.
Usually.
Yeah.
It's very common.
Things manifest then, or, you know, it's their early 20s, but it had already been kind of building for many years, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When did you decide to tell your story?
I decided to tell my story starting in 2014 when I was I overdosed, and I needed to really look at myself in the mirror and see that there was a lot of internal struggles that I was going through, and I couldn't block it even from myself anymore. So I started a blog, and I'd never blogged before, but two of my friends suggested, you know, you love to write, so maybe this is something that you should do. And I put it out there to the world. I said, you know what, I'm battling mental illness. And I felt, oh my God, what have I done? At first, I put myself out to the wolves, but there really wasn't any wolves. There was just so many amazing and supportive people who were looking for a blog the next day, and who could really relate either personally or could, you know, see a family member in what I was sharing. So that blog developed into my book, Save My Life School, but it was so cathartic to me, and it was the beginning of really losing the stigma that I wrapped myself in for so long. And I don't feel stigma anymore, thanks to starting my blog back then.
Yeah, it really does make a difference. You know, that's one thing is that we've seen is everybody that goes through this for an indeterminate amount of time, they feel alone, and then suddenly they find it within themselves to speak up. And once they do, everybody comes out of the woodwork. You know, we're all going through this stuff, and you realize what kind of community there is, and that you're not alone. And I think, you know, I think you said something really important there, is that you don't feel that stigma anymore. And I think that's one way we're all battling the stigma and going to battle the stigma, is by being comrades in this, you know, being together and being supportive of each other and telling each other that we're not alone, and that we're all going to get through this together. And we are going to get through
Absolutely.
This together, you know. So yep. That's awesome.
Thank
yeah, that's,
you.
It's definitely, you know, there are some people who make fun a little bit of how many of us are bloggers, but it's definitely a positive experience in my view anyway. I don't recall really any negative responses, you know, from my blog either. It really just. You know, you put yourself out there, but it ends up being healing in
yeah.
a way, you know, and I can understand that 100%. It that's where I began too. And, you know, I wasn't looking to wind up where I am now. I didn't even know I was going to make it public. So, yeah, I'm very much with you on that one.
Yeah. One thing that I've noticed is, regardless of life experience and what a person has gone through, when you put your story out there, somewhere, somehow, it resonates with a person,
mm-hmm.
you know, And that's where that sense of community and that sense of not feeling alone comes from. You know, there's aspects of Beck's story that resonated with people. There's aspects of your story that have resonated with people. And that's a good feeling.
Absolutely.
What's been the most rewarding part of your coming forward?
Their own stories, or just, you know, share that they're searching for more professional help now that they realize that they are deserving of it, anything like that. And also being a happier mom and knowing that I'm a good mom. For the longest time, I really didn't feel like I was a good mom. I have two kids, a 13-year-old and a 22-year-old, and they've seen me battle a lot of things. But back when I was battling, I used to try to hide it from them, and I thought that that was what moms were supposed to do. They were like, you know, superhuman and not supposed to have emotions except for happy emotions, and that's just not the right thing to do. And I found that they, you know, they can see through. They know, they're so intuitive. They know what's happening. And by me saying, oh, I'm fine, when I wasn't, it just made them worry more. So we talk about mental health like the weather in our family now, and that's probably one of the greatest things that's come from this.
Oh, that's good.
That's great. Yeah, it's very, very difficult conversation to have, especially with kids.
Yeah, and you're right, they are intuitive. They pick up on stuff, you know, and it's like the like our great niece that we're currently living with, you know, little 3-month-old, and she's the happiest thing in the world. And you know, we're real aware of whenever there's something negative going on in and or around us, you know, that we try and shield her from it. You know, she doesn't need to see anything negative like that at that age.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned earlier your book, Save My Life School. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So it's based on my blog, which is paramedicnatsmentalhealthjourney.com. It's a long, long title. Basically, if you Google paramedic nat, it will come up. But it is a combination of my blog's journal entries that I wrote while I was at rehab, and just experiences, the good, the bad, the ugly, everything, every emotion that I went through as I was recovering from PTSD, addiction, depression, and anxiety. And I just lay it out all on the line. And it's broken into 3 different chapters. The first chapter is basically I went to an outpatient program at a hospital where I live here in Ontario, and I share every day what I learned there and how I got humble and how I really realized that just because I was an advanced care paramedic didn't mean that I knew everything about mental health at all. And I really needed to accept that I was a patient too. And then the second chapter is my experience basically for 7 weeks of rehab. I went away for rehab for addiction and PTSD at a treatment center. And then the third chapter is life now. And what do I do now? And how do I cope? And it's never a perfect life. There's ups and downs. And I've had relapses of my depression, and I've needed to get care, professional care for it. And I just share basically what life looks like. And it's really been received well by people.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great chronicle to put out there, you know, and it's nice that you've got different parts of your journey through there, you know, because, you know, someone's going to read about, you know, when you were in rehab and relate to it. Someone's going to read about, you know, when you're going through the outpatient program and relate to it, you know, or find the motivation to go themselves, you know.
For sure.
And That's such a huge thing, you know, trying to find the wherewithal within you to realize, hey, I need to, I need to get help. I am dealing with some stuff, and I'm not in a good place, you know. I actually had one of those moments myself last year, and sorry about the coughing, Natalie. I got
something
going
okay.
on here. but yeah, I think help part of it is that, you know, with me being with Beck and recognizing what she goes through, it's helped me to realize stuff that I go through. And
for sure.
So when I was going through some difficulties about this time last year, I went to my doctor and I said, hey, I'm not doing well. You know, can you put me on a medication? Can you, you know, this is what's going on. You know, can we see if this will be a benefit to me? And it has. You know, I'm definitely in a better place than I was a year ago. And, you know, I feel healthier, you know.
Okay.
And not physically. Physically, I'm falling apart, but, you know, 44 years of age will do that. But but mentally, I'm in a good place, you know. And I think having that type of wherewithal to realize that you need help, you know, that's a huge courageous step. You know, it really is.
Were you in a relationship when you were going through all of these struggles, or were you kind of solo?
I started in a relationship and it fell apart, and it was very difficult because that person definitely tried their best to help me, and I basically pushed them away. I didn't know I needed help for the longest time, and it was my family and my loved ones who could tell that I did need it. But no, it fell apart. That relationship is done. And I've had to evolve and learn a lot more about what codependency was. I realized I was very codependent, and it wasn't a healthy relationship at the end of the day for my entire family. But it's sad because I've really spoken to so many people that have gone through struggles with recovery, and along the way their relationship falls apart, which is just so, like, it's like, oh my gosh, it's already hard enough. The last thing that you need is your relationship to fall apart too. And it was horrible. It was a horrible thing. But I tell people now, it does get better. And I used to hate when people say time heals, but it really actually does. So just one more day, just live this day, and then the next day and the next day, and time will go by, and it doesn't hurt anymore. So it's really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a good outlook to have on the whole situation.
Absolutely. You know, and that's, you know, it's unfortunate that the relationship ended, but, you know, if it wasn't a healthy situation for you to begin with, then, you know, ultimately it's for the best, you know.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah, you know, and that's a hard thing too. You know, going through these struggles just in general are ridiculously difficult. But, you know, when you do it and you're alone, it's even harder, you know, because at least when you've got somebody there, you've got a sounding board. You know,
mm-hmm.
And that's one thing I'm kind of proud about with Beck and I, is that, you know, we've been here for each other, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
and that's huge, you know,
for
but,
sure.
but you just exude this strength.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there would be, I think you would overcome anything, regardless of what you're going through. So,
thank you.
Well done you, you know.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Well, we've got to take our first break. So we will be back with you in just a little bit. And here is Your Magic by Matt Stern.
You are the best thing. You hold my heart inside your hands. Your magic. You make me crazy, your touch, it makes me lose my head, it's tragic. It's all over, that's what you said. You can leave when they want to. This feeling has gone to your head. much more. You feel like you're losing control. Nobody but me. Feel like I see you.
Welcome back to Voices for Change 2.0. I'm Joe. She's Rebecca. Say hi, Rebecca.
Hello.
You disappoint me. And we have on the line.
Not everybody wants to be cheesy week after week, mister.
You calm down over there. And on the line, we have Councilwoman Natalie Harris, as we discovered during the break. So,
that's fancy.
She's important.
Yes, very.
She's got stuff going on.
It keeps me busy, that's for sure.
Oh, I believe it. So congrats on the win, by the way.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
In case you're just tuning in, Natalie was previously a paramedic and has, as we were talking about on the break, let us know she's a councilwoman in Ontario, which is very, very cool. Very mm-hmm. adult job.
Yeah.
Yes, yep. Very, yes.
She's got to put on her big girl pants every day and go and take care of the community.
It's true. It's true. And it's been wonderful for my recovery as well, because it keeps me going and keeps me out of trouble.
I don't know where my big girl pants are.
That's okay, honey.
Okay. So anyway, as I slowly cough and fall apart physically, like I alluded to previously, we got a lot going on.
Yeah,
we do. It's a good weekend.
Definitely.
So you're looking at me as if I should be asking the question.
Yeah, I'm giving you the floor. You take it.
I
you're the excited one.
Yeah. I got that. Thanks for that. Yeah, you're coughing. Here, you talk. So, all right. So, Nat, please talk with us about Brainstorm Revolution. What is it?
Sure, yeah. So, it's a few things. The first thing that it is a not-for-profit organization that I founded with two other amazing women, Heather Down and Shelley Hoffer, who live in Ontario as well. And it basically provides people with a stage, whether that stage is an actual stage or a book, to share their stories about recovery. And so we have our first book published just a couple months ago. So it's Brainstorm Mental Health Revolution. And it has 40 different authors from around the world. We kind of classify it as a chicken soup for the soul feel. It's very short stories, but mental health related. So it's not a book about trauma. It's a book about hope and love and inspiration and resiliency and recovery. And we being myself and the publisher, who's also Heather Down, one of the founders of the not-for-profit, we really found that when we were making this book and collecting stories, we thought, okay, this is great. People are going to read this book. They're going to get so much out of reading people's stories and, of course, relating to them. But the wonderful side effect that we weren't anticipating was that the people who shared their stories had recovered so much more because we gave them the opportunity to do that. And I can definitely relate to how important it is to share your story. And I know you can too, Rebecca, with our blogs. It's everything to be able to have your voice heard and to know that you're not alone. So it will be an anthology. And right now we travel around and do productions and depending on the audience. So if we go to a rehabilitation center, we would do production on it, addiction. We just did one Valentine's Day about unconditional love and unconventional love stories. And it was wonderful. And again, we just give a medium to people to be able to share everything that they want to.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. That's such a heartwarming thing, you know, mm-hmm. Especially in the world we've got right now where there's so much negativity and death and the overall terribleness, you know, having something that you can find hope in and, you know, inspiration. I mean, that's y'all are doing good.
So thank you.
So that's great. Do you guys, when you do your, presentations, do you strictly stick to Canada or have you crossed the border at all and done anything in the States?
No, we're just strictly Canada right now. We've literally just started. So, we obviously are open to being anywhere. So people can go to brainstormrevolution.com. It's a website that's still being developed, but it kind of will give people a taste of who the authors are / speakers. And it's basically turned into a speaker series where people can really make whatever production they need for their company, whether it's something to do with workplace wellness, or like I said, if it's a rehabilitation hospital. We have so many different authors with so many different stories. They really appeal to anyone.
That's cool.
And you yourself are a public speaker as well. Can you think of maybe your most memorable event that you took place in?
Yeah, for sure. I'm very fortunate. I travel across Canada, and I'm going to North Dakota soon, so I am crossing the border. I'm very excited.
Yay!
Yeah, I am. It's wonderful. But I've been very fortunate over the last couple of years to share my story, and one that definitely stands out to me was I was doing a talk at a high school, and there was a student there. Her name is Zoe, and she's given me permission to use her name in stories because actually she's an author now in Brainstorm Revolution. She reached out, and at one point, it's really amazing. So we have all different ages of authors in the story as well. But when I was doing the presentation, she put up her hand and she said, you know, I'm so mad at my friend. I was suicidal. She called 911 on me. And I, you know, how dare she do that? And it really put me in a predicament because I was, of course, in agreement with the friend who called 911 on for Zoe. And we chatted after the presentation and kind of, I conveyed that different kind of perspective that she didn't call 911 on you. She called 911 for you. And it developed into a story that Zoe, I helped her craft a story and it's in the book now. And it's about basically that realization that her friend actually saved her life. And so now Zoe shares her story at her high school, has been in the media, and she's amazing. So that's one of the best impacts that I – and just seeing her evolve again with her own recovery, sharing her story is so gratifying and so wonderful. And I'm so proud of her.
That's
cool.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome when you see that kind of impact, especially in real time, you know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And having this relationship develop, this friendship, you know, I mean, that's cool, You know, that's making the impact, you know.
Right. For sure.
Everybody says, you know, we need to change things. We need to combat stigma. We need to do all these different things. And for some reason, we all think, oh, it needs to be this big, grandiose thing. No, it doesn't. It's the small interactions, the one-on-one interactions that are really going to make more of an impact, you know?
I agree.
And seeing what, you know, just being an example to others, you know, I mean, that's a big thing. And I take that from, you know, I grew up Catholic. So that was kind of the deal I was taught growing up was, you know, be an example to others, you know, and that's, I think, what we're all doing now with the mental health community. So,
yeah, for sure. The mental health community on social media, and, you know, Natalie, that's how I know you. It, especially Twitter, is just, I talk about it virtually every week, but, you know, and I'm beating a dead horse, but it's been fantastic. I don't think I would be anywhere near, I certainly wouldn't be doing this show if it weren't for the mental health community on Twitter. I mean, I can't say enough about the amazing people that are there and how they, you know, you don't see it as much now, but if there's a troll or negative comments or whatever, everybody just sort of rallies around that person
and
you know, offers them strength and hope and everything. And that's,
it's beautiful.
Really. It is.
It is.
It's amazing. And I'm really honored to know those people.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah. It really is. It's such a good support system, you know, for a lot of years, it was just back in myself, and, you know, there'd be days where I would be worried about her. You know, I'd be at work, and if she was having a bad day, there wasn't much I could do to reassure her besides, you know, talk or text with her where I could while trying to get my work done. And now, if she's having a bad day, she'll still let me know about it, but she also has all these incredible people that just reach out to her and reassure her and our support, you know, and she can do the same thing. And it's having that interaction is just key,
mm-hmm.
you know. So speaking of battling stigma, what do you think we need to do going forward to combat stigma?
I think what we're doing right now is exactly what we need to do, talking about it. Again, I wrapped myself in self-stigma and hid behind it for so long, and it made me very sick. And I was afraid. I thought people would judge me and think that I was weak and think that I was looking for attention and all these things. And that's not what happened when I started sharing my story. Of course, there, like you said, there are trolls out there, and it's very simple to block and to move on. Right? I mean, that's what I've learned to do. At first, I tried to convince them otherwise or, you know, mm-hmm. battle back. And now I don't do that at all. I just wish them happiness, wish them well, and block, because that's what I need to take care of, is my own health, number one, always. So, but mm-hmm. I think generally speaking, it's talking. That is number one. I'm very fortunate to have met through social media, again, one of our six-time Canadian Olympians, Clara Hughes. She's an amazing mental health advocate across the border here in Canada and all over the world too. But she saw my blog on Twitter and reached out to me and just said, you know what you're doing is so important, and please don't ever stop, you know. And it was about talking. And it's just, we have a campaign here called Bell Let's Talk, and it's really changed the face of stigma over the last couple of years and made it so it's okay mm-hmm. to talk, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, actually, I participated in that a little bit, you know, not too much, but I tweeted about that quite a bit this last year when you had it. Yeah, that's a really good, really positive thing that's come out of Canada, you know, and in addition, Sick Not Wheat comes out of Canada too, don't they?
Yes, Michael Landsberg, yeah. And I've done some presentations with him. He is such a powerful inspiration, especially for men. So I think what happens a lot to this day is men hide behind stigma and think, because we have this image that they need to be strong and how you know, oh my goodness, heaven forbid they have emotions, like, and Michael Landsberg has broken down the stigma because he shares his emotions, he shares his journey with mental illness, and it's opened the eyes of men and said, wow, I'm a human being, it doesn't matter, I have emotions, I'm deserving of help as well, and he's changed the whole landscape of men's mental health here in Canada, and again across the world, but really in Canada right now.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, it really is. As a man dealing with mental health issues myself, it's you have this thing where you feel like you can't be yourself or convey emotion. You know, you have to man up. You have to keep a stiff upper lip on everything. You know, and you know, unless like you're watching Old Yeller or something. You know, then it's okay to cry, but
right.
No, I mean we need to be involved and invested in our emotions as well, you know, and you know, just as an unrelated aside, there's a lot of great things that came out of Canada.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
Like Rush.
I agree.
Rush. And you know,
Geddy Lee.
Yeah. So I won't mention any of the other folks because you'll look at me funny.
I'm going to look at you funny regardless, my love.
Yeah,
I do.
That's what she does. So, but yeah, Rush. So there's Rush.
That's funny. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, and Bob and Doug McKenzie.
Oh, now you're really dating yourself.
I know.
You are dating yourself.
Oh, I do remember them. Yeah.
Yeah, love Bob and Doug McKenzie.
Oh my lord!
Yeah.
Take off, you hoser.
Yeah, so. That's very Canadian.
Yeah, for some of us, that was our first introduction to Canada as kids was those guys.
And, yeah.
You know, you grow up for
that's
a few years
funny.
Thinking that's what everybody in Canada is like.
But, no.
Yeah, we're just across the border, and
that's it.
We enjoy Canada a great deal. I mean,
yeah.
It used to be obviously easier to get there. Now we have to have our passports.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I know. It's bad.
We're actually taking the tack of, you know, I've got to get my driver's license renewed this year. Beck's getting hers renewed this year, and we're both going to get the enhanced licenses so we can just bop over whenever we want again. Because
that's great.
We both miss it. You know,
yeah, we spent an anniversary in Toronto. We went to the Toronto Zoo, and
yeah.
Which
nice.
Is amazing. We yeah.
Well, Barrie, the city that I live in is just an hour north of Toronto. So if you're ever across the border and you want to, Barrie's beautiful. We live right on the waterfront, and it's a gorgeous city. So if you want to visit a different city, let me know.
Yeah, for
absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's one thing I said back when we went to Toronto is that the American dream is alive and well, and it's in Canada. So, you know, that was
that's
the one funny thing that I noticed is just everybody just gets along and seems happier. And, you know, that
we
stays
are
with
pretty
you,
happy.
You know?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, Canada is a pretty chill place and kind of envious.
Yeah,
especially with the fearless leader that we have currently. But
yeah, well, let's not.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. I'm not gonna talk about the Great Orange Cheeto anymore.
That's a whole other topic.
Exactly.
Yeah, really. Whole other show. We don't do
no.
that stuff on.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
But,
so moving ahead on our
right along
plan of we have jotted down here. What advice would you have for anyone that is newly diagnosed with a mental illness?
Definitely to reach out to someone you trust and build a tribe around you that's supportive. So something that I definitely had to do, even though generally speaking, most people were overwhelmingly supportive of me when I opened up about my mental illnesses. There were some people that weren't, and I needed to not focus so much on them anymore, and that was okay. It was about self-care, and I used to be very, you know, make everyone happy and not put myself first, and that wasn't healthy for me. So it's not selfish to take care of yourself. And when I started to form a different tribe around me, my life just took a different turn, and the universe kind of guided me where I needed to go. If you just don't fight the path that's right in front of you, just put your foot on it and go down the path, and bring people around you that love you and care for you and unconditionally. So there was even family members that I needed to, you know, put my healthy boundaries up and say, I wish you happiness, I wish you well, but I can do that from afar. And that helped me tremendously. So I would say forming a tribe around you and making sure that you don't isolate and keep it all to yourself is so key.
Yeah, it's very, very difficult to do. I even still, you know, I'm going to be 46 this month. I still can find my patterns of isolating like that, and it, you know, not talking to anybody and just keeping it all inside. And you know,
me too.
It's very, very difficult. It's very difficult.
Yeah. And also that speaks to a saying that I love, which is, you're going to be too much for some people. Those aren't your people. You know, I love that saying. Yeah. You know,
great.
And it really is. It's true. You know, having, I love that you refer to them as a tribe, you know, and it really is, you know, it's just, you know, little community that you have rallied against you, and you know they're supportive of you, you're supportive of them, and you know when you've got good people in your life, and you know when you've got people that aren't healthy for you to be around, you know. And
exactly.
And sometimes it's difficult because like you're saying, they are, you know, family pardon me, they are family members, and you know it feels bad. And, you know, as the only way I can put it is, it doesn't feel right to have to, you know, put family members out of your life. But sometimes, like you said, it's all about self-care, and it's the, you know, the toxic people in your world that you've got to get rid of. And it's difficult, but it's one of the most important steps towards recovery.
Yeah.
Yeah. I say to people that, because a lot of people, again, will hear me share that that's something that I've had to do, and they interpret it that I have a resentment towards those people, and I don't. And I think that it's really important to know, and I've learned this through going to a Buddhist center that is in Barrie, that, you know, I wish people happiness, and I wish them well, and I send them love, and that is how I don't have a resentment towards anything that's happened in my childhood or whatever. For any trauma that I've been through as a paramedic, you know, I've been through some devastating situations as a paramedic, and it's all, you know, it is what it is, and I can't move forward with resentment, or that will pull me back into my addiction, number one, it will make me unhappy. So we can still have a tribe around us and make healthy boundaries that are loving, and that doesn't mean we have to not like a certain person. It just means that we are giving ourselves permission to put the people that we want in our lives there.
Yeah.
Well said.
Definitely.
Absolutely well said.
Do you have any concerns about your children developing mental health concerns?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And they have. My daughter battles depression and anxiety, and she's been public about it on social media. So that's something that we still are trying to manage for her. My son has battled with OCD, and he's doing really great now. But so it's something that, again, because we talk about our feelings and emotions and mental health, like we talk about the weather in our family, it's something that we're able to address early and not hide from. And when you were saying, Rebecca, that you were younger and you wake up and you'd have a stomach ache or a headache, that was happening to my son. And I needed to look into that seriously and see that there was an underlying problem that wasn't just made up. It was very real, and it was especially real to him. And we got him the care and the treatment that he needed.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, obviously not great that he has concerns, but you know, that you're able to address it. I mean, I think that's a sort of a, I don't know, I guess you can call it a benefit of having a mental health concern yourself.
It is. Because
you can see it and you know right away what to do about it. And you know, I guess that's a positive in the column of having kids with a mental health issue.
It's a pro.
Right.
Not a con.
Yeah,
right.
For sure. Totally.
Yeah. So Nat, we're getting low on time, but we want to put out your social media there for anybody that wants to reach out and get, you know, more information about Brainstorm Revolution or about Save My Life School or any other things you have going on. Where can our listeners find you?
That's a great question. So on Instagram and Twitter, you can find me at ParamedicNat1. So ParamedicNat and the number one. And Facebook, I'm Natalie Harris. I do have a website. It's a long name, so bear with me. It's ParamedicNat'sMentalHealthJourney.com. Again, if you Google Paramedic Nat, it should pop up. And that's my blog. I also have my campaign email at website, sorry, votenatalie.ca. And yeah, those are the best ways to get a hold of me. And you can message me through my blog if you have any questions about anything, and I will get back to you.
Awesome.
So what is next for you? What do you have on your agenda?
What's on the docket?
On the docket, definitely, is moving forward with Brainstorm Revolution. I have a lot more speaking engagements to do. And first and foremost is being a mom and being a city councilor in Barrie. And we have a bit of an opioid crisis here, and we're battling that right now and getting a lot of help and focus and provincially, federally, aiming a lot of direction and money towards treatment for people. So there's a lot on the docket, affordable housing, different things like that in our community. So, and I'm just so grateful that I'm able to partake in that now that I'm city councilor.
That's awesome.
It is awesome.
That's a positive note to end it on, I think.
Absolutely.
So
great.
Nat, you stay on the line, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, it's been great talking with you. It went by really quick.
Yeah, and
it did.
You know, if I want to say really quick too, if anything new that you want to highlight comes out with Brainstorm Revolution, or if you've got another book coming or anything like that you want to promote, by all means, we'd love to have you back.
That was so great. Thank you.
We've had a wonderful time talking to you, and you know, we just wish you the best of luck on everything.
Absolutely.
And you know, like I said, stay on the line. And for everybody else, here's another wonderful gem from Matt Stearns called Wanderer. Have a great weekend, everybody. Blue.
another prodigal son, destined to leave it all behind. He'll leave you in the dark while he's getting lost in the light. Hey, lover boy.